Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. In today's episode, Spence Chapin, Community Programming Manager, Transracial Adoptee, and Adoptee Advocate, Jessica Lucieri, speaks with Florencia Lalor. Flor is a psychologist, adoptee, and founder of La Voz del Hijo, an online space created for adoptees from her country of Argentina, but which has brought together adoptees from around the world. Flor was also one of the first mentors in the Spence Chapin Mentorship Program when it began in 2005. Join Jessica and Flor as they discuss their adoption stories, reunion with birth families, and the impact that the mentorship program has had on their lives and work.
My name is Jessica Lucieri. I am a Colombian transracial adoptee and adoptee advocate, and I work with Spence Chapin as the manager of community events. Today, I'm joined by Florencia Lalor, who is an Argentinian adoptee, and she was actually one of the founding mentors of our New York City mentorship program that started over 15 years ago. And so today we're here to talk about the impact that that program has had on her personally as an adoptee and also professionally. So Flor, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi, Jess. How are you? First of all, I want to thank you very much for inviting me to have this conversation. I'm a therapist in Argentina. I'm a licensed psychologist, but in the US, it's a therapist. Today, I actually work in my own private practice, and I work with kids, adolescents, adults. I specialize in adoption, in violence and trauma, and I also have an education in family therapy. And in the year 2018, I founded a website that's called La Voz del Hijo, which in English, if I translate it, it would be the adoptee's voice, something like that. And I also record podcasts for La Voz del Hijo. And there's a Facebook group that's only for adoptees. And I just want to tell people that the website, it's also in English. So it's a space that I offer for adoptees to share their stories. I would like to share a little bit about my adoption story, actually.
Sure.
I was born here in Argentina, and I was adopted by an Argentinian family. I always lived here. I went to live to New York for 5 years with my husband when we got married because of his job, but I've always lived in Argentina. I was adopted when I was 10 days old, and I grew up in a very open family. I mean, they were very open about adoption, so I always knew I was an adoptee. I don't even remember when they told me, because I guess I was very young. And I have an older brother who is also adopted. So I guess when I got home, he was already there. He's 3 years older than me. So I guess the conversation was already going on. And I remember my parents always telling us that if we ever wanted to search, they were going to support us. And here in Argentina, records are open. They've always been open for an adoptee. It's a right.
Wow.
So if an adoptee wants to search, you just go to the office of the state where the adoptions take place and they give you your information.
Wow.
Yes. That's incredible. Yes, I know. I know about records. I know about records in the US. So, yeah. And being the way the United States is, I cannot believe that the records are closed. I've been always amazed about that. So when I was 24 years old, I actually decided to search, and I actually found my birth mom very quickly.
Wow. And so you searched on your own, or did you have any help?
Well, I've always had like the support of my own therapist. I've known her since I was very young. So yes, she was always there for me. Well, and my parents supported me, and I was already dating my husband. So mm-hmm. he was there for me too. But when I found her, I was 24, and until I was able to meet her, a year went by. I guess she was, she probably had her own fears, and so we made an appointment to meet, and then she canceled, and then again, and so a wow. year went by, yes, until she finally didn't cancel, and she actually lives close to me. I'm from Buenos Aires. I live in the capital city, and she lives very close. Like she could be from everywhere in the country, anywhere in the country. And so I went to her place.
So she lived close to where you grew up, or close to where you were living at the time of when you found her?
No, Argentina, it's not like in the US that people move across the country all the time. It's like, most of the things are centered in Buenos Aires and a couple of other big cities in other provinces, but usually many people come to study here. Like, so, and when you finish high school, you stay and study where you live. You know, we here, like our culture is different. So it's not like you go to study somewhere else. That mm-hmm. doesn't happen. So when I was in university, I still lived with my mom, and I went to, we don't have also like campuses like there.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, so the university is only the building with the classrooms, and that's it. So wow. you live at home.
Okay.
So I guess, yes, she always lived close to where I lived.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So we met, and it was very nice for me. It was like meeting someone that I didn't know. So people sometimes ask me if I felt something special, you know, and I think the first time I saw her, I didn't. I mean, I was very nervous, of course, and I guess she was too. She told me, first of all, we had to break the ice, you know, so we spoke about anything. And then finally, I asked her why she gave me up, and she told me she actually had me when she was 35 years old. So she was not that young, and she already had a daughter, and her other daughter is 10 years older than me, and I was born the same day than her. Yes. So
you have the same birthday as your sister.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes. So she told me that she was working. She was a nurse, and she was a single mom already. And she told me she couldn't take care of two kids. Well, it was a nice meeting. Then I actually, like a couple of months later, I went to live to the United States. So when I saw her again, some time went by, and then we sort of lost contact until 2018, when I met her again, because I was searching for my birth father, she helped me. And I actually found him. It was more difficult, but I found him. And he didn't know about my existence. So, of course, he was very surprised. And he was actually very, very nice in that conversation. And then he asked me to give him time to process all this. And of course, I respect him. And until today, I haven't met him. I hope I do at some point, but I haven't met him. So I think that's my story in a very, the shortest possible way I could tell it.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's coming from a place where I, you know, I'm privileged enough to know and to hear a lot of adoptees' stories, and follow them on their journeys. The line of work that I'm in, and even, you know, professionally and also personally, I've always in my adult life been connected to adoptees, and adoptees just naturally share their stories with each other. You know, yes. That's the wonderful thing I think about being in spaces with adoptees, is that most of the time we don't need to know much more about each other than the fact that we're adopted to know, yes, that we can connect, right? We, yes, can be from different parts of the world, but, yes, there's still this common thing that we share. And in all of the stories that I've heard, and I've heard a lot of stories about, you know, how, why people were placed for adoption, the circumstances surrounding, you know, their birth family and search, and proximity to birth family. You know, it's so fascinating to know that you lived so close to your birth mother, and to know how open the records are in Argentina, as opposed to the United States and many other countries around the world, where there's almost this extra like emotional step that you have to go to, because, yes, now it's like, it's once the adoptee makes the decision that they want to open Pandora's box and search. You know, we hear of so many stories of adoptees who have to go down the road of finding a private investigator.
Yes.
Talking to attorneys, going to orphanages, and all of these things bring up a lot of trauma themselves.
Yes. Yes.
It's almost like once you've gotten through the emotional process of making the decision to say, yes, I want to start this process, and then all of a sudden you have to start a totally new emotional process, investing your time and your confidence in somebody else in trying to help you, to know that that step doesn't necessarily even happen in Argentina. Like, you can make the decision and then you can make a phone call and then you can start getting, yes, information. It's almost like, it's just such a different kind of experience than I personally had when I came to the decision of wanting to search. I mean, you and I both searched and reunited at very similar ages and very similar stories. I went through a private investigator, but I was 23 when I found my, yes, birth mother, and a year went by, and then I went down to Colombia and we reunited. We had like this big, like, I don't know, out of a movie reunion with like a million people packed into a room, and like everyone looks like me. And
wow.
It was overly emotional because of the drama that the private investigator brought to the room. And he himself was like, I believe he used to be in like film or something. And he was just really putting on a show for, you know, this whole event. And it made it so much more of a bigger production. But once, the way that my reunion worked was, once I was in the room, I'm looking around thinking that I'm going to see my birth mother somewhere. He was introducing, yes, me. This is your aunt. This is your cousin. This is your brother. This is your sister. But there was nobody in there that was my mother. Every time I came across an aunt, I thought that that was going to be my birth mother. And then he sits me down and makes this whole big speech in Spanish. And I spoke no Spanish at the time. And then he like slowly walks her in, and it was just like this movie moment.
Wow.
And it was overly emotional because it was overly dramatized.
Yes.
When I could only imagine that had it have been not like that, it would have just kind of maybe been a more like normal moment, whatever that means.
Yes. Yes. I understand. Yes. Like it was for me. I mean, we were alone. I went to her place. I brought her flowers. I remember. Wow. And she just answered the door and we sat down.
Wow. That's incredible. Yes. And you know, you're lucky in that, as you know, you're a domestic adoptee.
Yes.
So with the domestic adoptions, like anywhere, it's a lot of those kinds of cultural, racial borders or barriers that we kind of cross as people who were taken out of the country of which we were born, we face. You know, I didn't speak Spanish. I didn't have any knowledge of what it meant to be Colombian, Colombian culture. I wasn't raised in it. So to go down there and be immersed and be at the mercy, basically, of all of these Colombian people who look like me, it was a life-changing moment. And every time I go down there, it's almost like an out-of-body experience. So it's so interesting to imagine what it could have been like to have an experience like yours and have it be almost normalized, and like, and all of the dramatic pieces of it were kind of taken away, and you just have that moment where you're meeting this person.
I still felt it was like so surreal. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's actually, it still is. Like when I think about it, like,
of course,
that's my mother. Like I grew up inside of her. It's like,
I know.
So surreal.
I know. I think it always will be.
Yes.
She's almost like this. It's like an ethereal kind of person that like exists in our minds and exists in in like this deep sense of like longing for identity, like who is this person to me? What will it be like when I meet them? And I can say I speak Spanish now, not fluently, but I'm a lot better than I was back then. And I had to learn it in the 16 years that have gone by, so that I can communicate with my family down there. But no matter how much Spanish I will ever learn, I will never know the right words to say to her. And it will never feel natural when we're together. Like, I'm so thankful that like my brothers and sisters are usually around when we're together. And now I have my husband and my kids. But when we're together, it's like this feeling of, we both know that we have a lot to say and to ask about each other.
Yes. Yes.
We don't, but we won't do it. Like we won't communicate it to each other. It's a very interesting.
I know. I feel the same.
Yeah. So when you talk about your time in New York, you know, in that time when you were here, you know, you had just gone through this, your process of opening up that piece of your own identity. So how did you come to find Spence Chapin and the mentorship program?
Okay. Well, I actually don't know if I ever told you this, but I went to Spence Chapin because of Lynn Franklin. She wrote a book that's called, in English, it's May the Circle Be Unbroken. And it was translated to Spanish. And two of very of my closest friends gave it to me as a gift when I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
And I read her book, and for me it was like a before and after in my life, because reading her book for me, it was like I read what I felt for the first time ever.
Wow.
And especially because maybe here in Argentina people didn't speak about adoption as much as in the US. So, and because I didn't know anyone but my brother and a cousin of ours. But so that book was very important for me. And I decided to write her an email. There was an email on the back of the book and she answered, and I couldn't believe it. Imagine, I thought, she's replying me that I'm in Argentina all the way down here. And she replied. And then a couple of years went by and I suddenly had to move to New York and she was there. So we met in person and she was so nice. She passed away in July, actually now. Yes, so yes, it was, I mean, it's very sad to think that like she's not here anymore. I actually have a podcast. I interviewed her.
Wow.
Yes, and it's been heard almost 40,000 times.
Wow.
Yes. That's
incredible.
Yes. Yes.
So did you kept in touch with her?
I kept in touch always. Yes, wow. Always. And actually, like I could work in the US because I had the work permit and everything, and it was so hard for me to find a job as a therapist. And so she sent me to Spence Chapin to see if I could volunteer.
Ah.
So that's why I ended up there, and I ended up doing some volunteer work with Heidi Arthur was mm-hmm. working there at that time, and I helped her with anything I could. Wow. And then I was part of the mentorship program, and I guess that's the story.
So you were a part of the mentorship program in the first year?
Yes.
Yeah, you were, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was so
it was the pilot project.
Right.
Yes.
It was such a long time ago that my mind is a little fuzzy. I mean, obviously I remember us being mentors together, but because that first year was just such an experimental kind of year to like put this program together, I think like you almost can't place it because there was no structure necessarily. There was but because we were building the foundation of what this program has become and still is.
I mean, I know what's the program like now because you've told me.
Yes.
And I think it's great. But back at the time, I remember feeling like, okay, we meet with the kids and what do I tell them?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? What do I say?
Right.
And they would tell us nothing, just hang out.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I remember that.
I think, you know, it's so funny to look back on it because we really, like now, you know, the way the program runs is, you know, we meet once monthly from September to June, which is how we did it back then. And we would meet on a weekend. And there are days that we're in the Spence Chapin offices and we're talking about adoption and we're talking about what it means to be an adoptee, what it means to be for those of us who are transracial adoptees, transnational adoptees, to have family that you don't look like. What does it mean? What does it mean to be an adoptee and understand how the pieces of your identity come together? You know, what does it mean to be an adoptee and try to navigate the difficult conversation of race and racism at home? Are we talking about race? You know, how much does race play into our families?
Yes.
Especially for those of us who are, you know, transracial.
Yes.
And may not have parents who look like us. But back then it was kind of like, okay, we're all adoptees and we're in this room together and then we figure it out. By doing those kinds of conversations and starting those kinds of conversations in a way, because at some point we got into that room and we're like, all right, we're all adopted. That's where we start. And then we went out and we did fun things and we had activities that we did offsite to help break it up and formalize our group so that it wasn't just like this group of adoptees talking about adoption. I mean, we can be adoptees who work with adoptees all the time, but sometimes you just don't want to be an adoptee. You just want to be a normal person
who
doesn't have to think about identity formation. And that's why, you know, I think programming like ours was so important because it normalized, it kind of took this feeling of always having to be living in your adoptee skin off the table while also being in it at the appropriate times with people who could understand your perspective and your
yes.
So as a mentor in that program, Can you remember what it felt like to join a program like that? And had you ever been in a space before with so many adoptees? Willingly, for the sake of being adopted.
Now I can say yes, because I actually went to the Indianapolis conference in 2018.
Yeah.
But for me, being part of the program was like a very big deal. It was very important, because I actually remember when I was a teenager, I remember that many times I told my mom, I want to meet an adult adoptee. I would ask her, like, don't you know anyone? Mm. I want to speak with an adult adoptee. Mom, come on, ask your friends if they know someone.
Yeah.
And she didn't. And I was never able to meet an adult adoptee.
That's amazing. It's profound.
Yes.
It's profound, truly. To think as a younger person, like thinking about adult adoptees, I don't think, because when you're, you know, for so many of us, when you're an adoptee, you kind of just feel like you're in this by yourself, and you don't think there's other people who may share this experience or the things that you share. So I don't think I ever would have thought in my younger years to ever even consider that there was other adoptees, let alone adult adoptees out there.
Well, I remember telling my therapist too, like, don't you know any adult adoptee? I want to speak with an adult. Yes, it was like such a strong desire I had for that.
So you're saying manifested this mentorship program.
Yes, really. Like, it's, and then I moved to New York and this opportunity came up and I couldn't believe it. And I've never met any other adoptees ever until I moved to New York.
Yeah.
I always had my brother, but he doesn't, I mean, he speaks about adoption, but not like me. So,
right.
And we have a cousin who is a couple of years younger than me, but she doesn't speak about adoption much either. Mm-hmm. So I felt sort of alone. And when I went to New York and I started meeting other adoptees, I had for the first time ever such a relief, because I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm not crazy. This is normal, you know, the way I feel and what I think.
Yeah.
It's normal because I'm adopted, and I felt, wow, I'm not crazy.
Right. You're not, it's not even, but it's also a feeling of belonging, right?
Yes. Yes, totally. Totally. Like, I guess when I came back to Argentina and I was no longer part of the mentorship program. And if you ask me what it left me, like, I guess it left me like a sense that I'm not alone. And that there is a community, an adoptee community, and that we are many people. So it was actually very good for me.
And that was a long time ago. So that was before.
Yes, I think it was it 2015 or 16.
The 16? Mentorship program?
Yeah. No, sorry, 2006 or 2005. Yes.
2005 it was founded, and then 2006. Yeah, it was founded in 2005.
Okay. I was 25, 26. Yes, a long time ago.
Yeah.
41. Yes.
So, you know, so when you think about that feeling that you just expressed of finding this community, and, you know, that in itself is its own kind of shift in your identity, right? When you find a community, whether it be something as deeply rooted as an adoptee community, where you're meeting people who, you know, whenever adoptees find other adoptees, it's this profound moment of validity, you know, of saying my experience is valid and it's shared and I don't have to be alone. I also don't have to share parts of myself.
Yes.
I'm allowed to be me and be a part of this community in whatever way I want to participate in it.
You know that hearing you talk now, I thought about my work in my private practice. Mm-hmm. You know that I would love to have the mentorship program here. I mean, I would love to. I need to find some help to be able to
I'll do it. I'll come down there and help you.
Please do.
I'd love to.
Now that you practiced your Spanish, you can do it.
Yes. Still might be a little rocky, but sure.
But when I work with little kids, all ages, and the smallest kids that come and see me, when they know that I'm an adoptee too, mm-hmm. that's everything like sort of falls into place. Like they love me like mm-hmm. magically because I'm an adoptee like them.
Right.
It's all that matters. It's amazing. Like I've had kids that are small and they tell me, I remember one that told me in a low voice, you know, we were alone and she told me, you and I, we understand each other, right? Because we are both adoptees.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
Yes. It's like so powerful.
I can't even imagine how powerful that must have been for her to even be able to say that, to know that and then say it as a young person to an adult saying something so big.
Yes.
That's incredible. But that it's a testament to understanding for us as adoptees why connecting with other adoptees is so important. It's because it gives a sense of normalcy. Being adopted is such a very difficult thing to explain. You almost can't explain it, which is why, I don't know about you, but for me, I feel like even some of the closest people in my life, mm-hmm. my family, my friends who I've grown up with and are like my sisters and my brothers, there's an element of who I am and how I am that they will never understand. But
yes,
I can get into a room, a physical room, or I can get into a virtual room with somebody I've never spoken to in my life who lives on the other side of the country. And because we are both adopted, that person will understand me instantly.
Yes.
So when you think back on mentorship, how did it impact the rest of your work professionally and personally? What did you take away from your experience in New York, not only just through mentorship, but also, you know, just personally, such as a young person, kind of with your husband?
Well, personally, I think when I came back, I felt like I felt I could speak about my adoption more openly without caring about anything at all. And I thought I want adoptees in Argentina to have what I had in New York.
Wow.
There was no adoptee community here. There was nothing. And La Voz del Hijo, I guess, like I was actually, first of all, I was very nervous about doing it. My story is there and I was nervous about telling it, but then I did. And sometimes I'm still surprised about how many people it reached, like all over Latin America. And the other day, a woman from Ibiza, Spain, wrote to me, like, there's a guy from Italy who doesn't speak Spanish, but we translate, you know?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. And I think it was necessary for the whole Spanish-speaking community, not only in Argentina. Like, I'm working with people from all over Latin America now, and I thought Argentina was like a step back, and I realized there are many other countries who are like way, way back than us. Like adoption is still a very taboo topic and people don't speak about it and people don't say anything and people don't speak about first families. And so I guess there was a need for many Spanish speaking people to have an adoptee community. And my impulse to do that, I think it came from being there in New York and having my community in the mentorship program and meeting other adoptees. Like I was, I was like decided to give adoptees here that. So I guess the impact was very important.
I mean, it was impactful, right?
Yes.
It was impactful on you. And because of the impact that it had on you, you've now made an impact on an entire continent of people, which is extremely incredible. Yes.
I always tell people, I'm amazed how I've learned that no matter where we are from, what culture we belong to, what religion we follow, what language we speak, there is something that we all share. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, as somebody who was in that first year of mentorship with you, it's been such a great experience to, you know, stay in contact with you, to hear about the work that you're doing, to know that you're continually working with this community and doing wonderful and very important and incredible things in South America. Well, thank you so much, Flor, and thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for being a part of the program with me in the beginning, and we've kind of gone on, you know, this journey, and now we get to still be in each other's lives and hear about the work that we're doing. And it's been such a nice time to talk to you today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you too for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to spence-chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.